get started. Josh and I are both sick. And I might go in and out of this stream because I've got three kids that I'm taking care of solo mission. Wife's out of town this weekend. But we could not pass up an opportunity to talk about what happened today and what's going on tonight. So we're going to talk with y'all for a little bit. May not be as long of a show. It definitely won't be as long of a show as we normally do, which is 2 hours. But we're here with y'all to talk Bama and Georgia, Michigan and Iowa. Let's settle in and have some fun. Josh, we'll also talk about Big 12 championship that happened earlier in the day. But the news of the day is that shocker, right? That shocker, Alabama and Georgia. And we're not going to take a victory lap on picking because neither one of us picked Georgia. And somebody earlier this week gave us an opportunity to take an out and kind of take Alabama. And we still said Georgia's going to win this game. And the way we do this is we don't, you know, you said on the preview that you don't pick underdogs. And that's why you never pick against Alabama. And you were doing it here. We don't take flyer hot take picks just for the sake of taking them. And so we stuck with it. There was no data to support Alabama winning this game. But you offered, and we offered really in our preview, a path for Alabama to give Georgia some pressure and for Georgia to maybe be exposed a little bit in that secondary. So, Josh, if we're taking a victory lap, it's going to be on scheme things and things we pointed out. Is the first one and the main one the warning sign you've been saying all year of this Georgia secondary hasn't been tested? They haven't seen a high-flying passing offense. Is it that one more? Or is it the fact that Georgia didn't have that verticality in their offense? Which one would you, if you had to pick one of the things we've been pointed out all year, was the one that was really the key factor in this game?
You're making me pick one. I think the thing that showed up the most in this game that we had noted was my belief that Georgia's offense was going to have trouble scoring a lot of points if they needed to in a game where Georgia where Georgia was having issues throwing the ball vertically. And now this is something there was a lot of back and forth with a lot of Georgia fans, especially when we're doing previews and we've done previews throughout the year. And Bowers is a huge focal point of their offense, and he's the leading receiver. You saw why in the SEC championship game, the guy's absolutely a stud. And I've repeatedly made the comment that I don't think it's a healthy thing for Georgia's offense to run primarily through the tight end. And a lot of people, I think because maybe they don't understand the way I look at games, took that as a negative on Bowers, which it absolutely wasn't. The point I'm trying to make with that is if you are relying on a tight end who is an absolute freak to get 12 yards at a time and go all the way down the field, you are asking for a crazy amount of efficiency from your offense to be able to score. And Bowers got them some points, but it was enough to get them 24 points in the game, right? What they needed was some sort of deep threat that Bowers was opening up, right? If you put Bowers on Alabama's offense where he can get first downs, you know, whenever they need to by throwing to the tight end on top of what they have in the passing game, they'd be nigh unstoppable. But with Georgia without any deep threat, I think it was, you know, it's a great player that's moving the sticks and moving the sticks. And they would get like four first downs on a drive and stall, because all it takes is Stetson Bennett missing Bowers on one pass or him being double covered and, you know, through an interception in the red zone where Alabama more than anything was just like had leverage on the route. And that's all it takes for those drives to die, because you're not really leveraging the efficiency that Bowers gives you. And so I think if there was anything, that was probably the point I've made repeatedly with Georgia that I actually felt like was the most valid, because a lot of people are going to look at Alabama scoring 41. And we talked about this a lot. Alabama as an offense has the potential to score 40 plus points if they get everything together in the right game. That was just something they could do. My concern was throughout the season was much more the fact that, okay, if Georgia plays an Ohio State or an Alabama that has a reasonably good defense and they get in a game where they need to score 40, I did not feel that their offense, which was very efficient, would be explosive enough when straining to score, would they be able to keep pace? And I don't think I was necessarily wrong with that.
And for me, like, I think that the verticality was an issue once they got behind, but nobody thought Alabama was putting up 41. Yeah, I think it, you know, one of those was a pick six, so it wasn't entirely 41, but nobody thought that Georgia needed a lot of verticality in their offense, a lot of explosiveness in their offense, to because they didn't expect to need 30-something points. And look, this year is different. I'm going to say right now, this year is different, and I still think Georgia's defense is legit elite. I felt like going in this game that Alabama, you know, if they scored 27, they probably win. But Josh, is it fair to say, because there's a lot of Georgia fans on Stetson Bennett right now, and we did see, we saw in the third quarter when Georgia was kind of, they were down 21, they needed 5-6 minutes to move the ball down the field. Now, they weren't getting stopped, but they needed those 5 or 6 minutes to move the ball down the field. Isn't it fair to say that if Georgia gives up a normal amount of points in this game, 24, 27 points, which is, you know, double what their high is 17, but, you know, a lot more than their high, Stetson Bennett in this offense would have been enough probably to win the game.
Yeah, I think so. If they had stayed on top of Alabama scoring throughout the game, I think it would have been enough. Look, you, one of the things I talked about in the preview, right, is game, and I talked about, we were on Josh Pate's Twitter space, which was actually pretty cool. It was me and Brooks Austin from Sports Illustrated, was a beat writer for the Dogs. And we were talking a lot about the paths that Alabama had to win. And my big point was you win or lose football on both sides of the ball. And if Georgia had been in a position where their defense was holding Alabama to like 20 points or less, and the offense could operate the way they want to operate, I think they had a decent chance to win. And if Alabama's offense or Alabama's defense had been given up more points, then I think Georgia's defense would have been a little more confident. But the fact that Alabama took the lead in the second quarter, and this is actually something we talked about in the Twitter space, when we were talking about pressure, I had made the point that I feel like if Georgia got into the second quarter and they were trailing, the pressure narrative was going to really shift, because they came in as the hunter. This was like a rivalry game. They were ready to go, and they felt like it was their time to take it to Alabama. And this is something I've seen that's happened to Alabama in games like this. You know, Texas A&M, I don't know if you agree with me, kind of felt this way. If you have that mentality and you come in to where, you know, all of a sudden you think you're going to come in and give somebody a punch, you know, Alabama, Auburn, probably a better example, and you don't, and then that crowd sort of flips and your crowd's energy really gets killed by that because the anxiety gets to them, it makes a big difference. And I think one of the big differences there, there's two things I want to cover, right? And we talked about this before. One is crowd noise or somewhat lack thereof. And then the second thing is the effect of holding or lack thereof, or holding calls or lack thereof in the game on both sides.
Yeah, and you noted before on Twitter, before the game started, that there's going to be holding like crazy and it's not going to get called much. Now, there was holding that was called on a couple of plays on both sides. It's funny, there was a lot more egregious holding that actually did happen that went unflagged than the stuff that they actually called on either team, which I thought was a little bizarre. That did favor Alabama. But what's interesting to me, Josh, is we saw the blueprint. LSU game, Auburn game, we saw the blueprint. And in neither of those games was Alabama really able to adjust. Kirby's been getting pressure with four all year. And that has been something that's given them a little bit of comfort, because they could handle, you know, they could send four and have everybody back and still play man. Like, did it shock you a little bit that Georgia came out and was sort of happy to just send four in the first half and really a little bit in the third quarter as well, and really didn't start sending a real pressure blitz to Bryce Young until the game was kind of out of hand?
It was interesting for sure. It didn't necessarily shock me. Something that I had thought about a lot, so I put out a Twitter post, right, on talking about the path for Alabama to win. And I noted 1.5 to me. The more I thought about it and the more I looked at the way the money was going, it felt like that line was way too low and it was really alarming me. But one of the big issues is that Georgia has personnel problems due to health in their secondary. But Georgia's been able to kind of hide it due to who they've played and what the strengths and limitations were of those opposing teams. they hadn't played a team that could go four wide on a consistent basis and distribute the ball well enough to force Georgia into a look with more safeties and to force, more than anything, to force Georgia to actually cover those guys with DBs and try to keep safety help over the top. And when Alabama, because of Alabama and who they are, were able to do that, I think that forced Georgia to put fewer guys in the box. When you have fewer guys in the box, your opportunity to blitz is significantly lessened. And if you blitz those guys, then you often don't have anybody over the middle of the field and you give easy passes. So there's only so much you can really do. And I mean, you know, I made the point in holding, so I'll go ahead and sort of talk about that a little more. The SEC, as we talked about in a tweet to start the day, the SEC does not call holding in big games consistently on either team. And be it Anderson or Carter or Turner or whoever, Wyatt, everybody was being tackled at the line of scrimmage in this game. Like, there was no holding calls being called. I don't know how many times I saw Bryce Young or Stetson Bennett get the edge escaping the pocket because the edge player was just straight tackled. But because of that, it made it really hard for pass rushes to get home. And because pass rushes are going not getting home, you can't afford to leave guys one-on-one without safety help. So that stuff all compounded on each other. I think it benefited both teams in the passing game. Like, I don't think Georgia would be as effective in the passing game as they were or anywhere near that close. If there was like equal lack of holding calls, there were a lot of plays where Alabama probably would have gotten pressure. But from a style of play perspective, I think it was really beneficial to what Alabama's trying to do in the passing game. And again, it was something that we talked about before the game even happened. That was always the way it was going to be called. And I do think that had an effect on the way Georgia played it. But again, if you take that away, I'm not saying it makes Georgia win. Don't take that angle from it. I'm just saying it had a real effect on the way that the game was being played, especially from a schematic standpoint for Georgia.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people in the comments that are killing us saying we're not pointing out the fact that, like, Georgia benefited more than Alabama from bad calls or whatever. I think that's true as well. Like, I think Georgia got away with some stuff or got some calls that went their way that ultimately the sum total of those calls that were bad calls or no calls that favored Georgia probably does outweigh the ones that went for Bama or didn't go for Bama. What we're saying is something entirely different. We're saying schematically the concept of not throwing the flag on holding, that specific thing. We're not talking about the flags that were or were not thrown in the game. We're talking about not calling holding benefited Alabama more because their offensive line is the one that's been tossed like a wet paper bag, which you don't toss that, you tear through it, right? Their offensive line has been abysmal. So if you let their offensive line have an advantage, that is a bigger advantage for Alabama than it is for Georgia. That's what we're saying. We're not saying that Alabama got more favorable calls. I think Georgia probably got a few more breaks than Alabama on the flags that were actually thrown. But people are saying roughing the kicker. It was actually, if I remember correctly, it was a punt and he ran into him. It would have been 5 yarder. It was 4th and 10. So that wouldn't have done anything. Alabama fans are taking a second victory lap right now in the chat. Because I think that they just beat Gonzaga, which is a big deal, a big Saturday for them. Josh, I want you to touch on this real quick. Because there are a lot of people that are saying that we missed the pick. We need to own it. I don't think either one of us are saying that we didn't. Like, we completely missed the pick. I made a joke on Twitter earlier about y'all need to pray for those of us that are picking because we're getting them wrong left and right this year. We absolutely missed the pick. What we're saying is there was no data. There was no play on the field that suggested Alabama would win, much less blow Georgia out, and nobody was picking that. But yes, we absolutely missed it. Am I missing something here, Josh?
Yeah, we both missed the pick. I mean, we had it 27-17 Georgia. That was wrong. I mean, you can say we hedged or whatnot on Twitter or the Twitter space. The reality was I had reason to be concerned and I was second guessing it a lot. I talked about that on the Twitter space, which I always say these things only if I've actually gone on record somewhere and put it out there. I try not to say it without some sort of receipt. But no, we did miss the pick totally. But the thing, there was always a path to success. and Georgia was the favorite. So I don't really feel bad missing a pick where Alabama wins by 17 and a 6.5 point spread, right? I mean, Alabama was 4 touchdowns off the spread. At some point, that's an odd result or an unpredictable result. I don't think Vegas is that bad at predicting spreads. And you know what? College football is a really unpredictable sport. But the thing that's interesting and the thing that we're trying to get into, and I'd love for you guys maybe in the comments section to get into it, like, what were the specific things? And I mean technical. You can talk about heart. You can talk about Georgia sucks, which is – I'm seeing a lot of Michigan fans and Big Ten fans talk about how the SEC sucks because Alabama beat Georgia. That's a bizarre take on a lot of levels. Why does the conference beating itself matter? We harp on that all the time. And if you want to say Georgia sucks, I saw Georgia beat the crap out of a lot of good teams this year. But – you know, what were the things that caused this to flip on its head? And I think the most obvious one is that Alabama does present different challenges than other teams Georgia played. And the interesting thing there too, without getting into it with Michigan, like I haven't seen, you know, the end result, obviously the Michigan Iowa game, but I have a feeling you're going to see Michigan and Georgia be 2-3 and Cincinnati be 4. Mm-hmm. And like the way Georgia looked or struggled at times with Alabama is probably not going to translate at all versus Michigan and the style of play they have. And that isn't even really to say that Michigan is that much worse than Alabama. It's a stylistic thing. And Alabama, in the unique challenges they presented and having a very, very high end run defense to top that off, the fact that they had a passing game, was a tough matchup for Georgia. And I don't think any of us, based off what we'd seen on the field, and especially from Alabama's offensive line, where they've struggled repeatedly in recent weeks, expected them to have enough time to throw to really leverage those things in the way they did. So you get an interesting game. But yeah, I mean, again, I'd really love to hear, you know, for productive comments, you know, why don't you guys put in specific things, matchups, things that you feel like happened in this game that you weren't expecting or were unusual that mattered? Because I think that's the interesting thing to take away from it.
Yeah, and we also said if the Alabama that showed up for Ole Miss and Mississippi State shows up in this game, they're going to win. We said that multiple times. What we also said, though, is since Mississippi State, Alabama offense and defense have not shown up in the same game. And until they do, I'm not assuming they will. And that's our thing. It's like it's like the people who say, you know, we got this five-star freshman coming in. You need to attribute that depth to us this year, even though you've never seen him play. I needed to see Alabama put it together after people figured out the blitz was the way to beat them. And then I give them credit for it. So I'll give them credit for it going into the next game. I got to give a shout out to Jermaine. Jermaine Jones is a resident Georgia fan who shows up week in and week out. He has shown up to dish it out all year, and rightly so, because his Bulldogs have been atop the hill all year. He's showing up tonight and telling everybody in the comments that he's here to take his lumps, which is awesome, because a lot of people don't show up after that. So we got 2 super chats from him already. One just to take his lumps, and then the other to say that he's resigning the fact that we're the Bills of the college football. Heartbreak is the status quo for my dogs. Look, I think that Alabama put it together in this game. The next time you play Alabama, if you play them this year, it's 0-0. So I wonder, Josh, who do you think that favors in a rematch? Because in a rematch, like tonight, Alabama had the benefit of being the hunter, of being the playing with house money, no pressure, no nothing. If Alabama and Georgia play again, and Alabama and Georgia has all this tape on how they're going to match up against them and all the things that they did new tonight, I'm not picking out, like, even if I pick Alabama to win that game, I'm not picking a blowout. Like, I think that's anybody's game in a rematch, right?
Yeah, I don't think that what happens in one game is necessarily going to happen again in the second. I mean, it certainly can happen twice, but you know, we just saw Oklahoma State and Baylor play a 2-game series, and you got 2 very different results, and that happens all the time. And one of the big things, look, these are going to be different teams in the playoff. Mechie is not going to play in the playoff. They're going to have different guys that they've got a month to get some of those young receivers ready to go, and they probably will be ready to go, but it's going to look different. Georgia is obviously getting Pickens back healthy. They've got a lot of DBs that are banged up. They're going to be healthier. Alabama, the offensive line, has their starting center out. He's probably going to be back. I don't know if they'll roll with him or if they'll just focus on McLaughlin that have been playing for him. But there's a lot of stuff with these two teams. Again, Malachi Moore, my understanding is that he's banged up. And you saw Brian Branch in there getting beaten pretty badly a couple times by Bowers. Really physical player, but struggles in coverage. How's that going to look? So I think it's just a different game. Because of the situation, people are going to put a lot of stuff on emotion. But I've always said emotion, more often than not, takes a second seat to matchups and things of that ilk. And I think you end up with a pretty different game. There's a lot of stuff here to track, but I'm going to note one thing. Kiltak9 gave us a super chat, and he's been following us all year, and I really appreciate it. But he noted the model wasn't that far off for the Georgia and Bama game. And he said, is it possible that people are underestimating the SEC West? Well, I think there's two parts to that in my mind. The first part is I absolutely think people are underestimating the SEC West, especially the end of the year. Auburn, we thought would be a bad team. They're not a bad team. They're really, really limited offensively. That's why they lost to Alabama. But they're not a bad team. But the other thing I think is Arkansas is when they played Georgia with Jefferson hurt. And I kept bringing that up. It was a different team. But they're a really, really good team when they're healthy. LSU, the tail end of the year, I think has been playing at a completely different level than they were early in the season when Orgeron was really the coach. So, I mean, there's probably something to that.
And the grind is different, right? Like, it's not just that there's not – and that's what people miss sometimes is there's not one – other than Ole Miss, maybe there's not one really super elite or really good team, but you've got – when you play week in and week out, a bunch of, like, nationally 8-9 win type teams, that grind is different than what Georgia had in the SEC East.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably true. And there's something to be said that if Alabama can get healthy, and I don't know how healthy they will or will not be, I honestly think there's a pretty significant advantage to be in the situation Alabama's in, because those battle-tested things tend to flesh out all these little warts. And again, you talk about a rematch. I think Georgia might be in a better position because they'll realize there's things that they worked and didn't work, and they got some things exposed that they can now fix. And so those games are really important for that sake. And I think that was probably to Alabama's benefit to the extent that they were healthy enough to field a team. And they are barely healthy enough to field a team, to be honest.
But that's one thing I thought, and I didn't say on our preview, was if somehow Alabama can find a way to get into the playoffs, they might be a much different team, given that they're hanging on by a thread at running back. They've got a center that played a little bit last week, but was too injured to really go, who will probably be back a month from now. They might get Chris Allen back. Like, they do lose Mechie, although Ja'Cory Brooks got a ton of experience last week. I saw Holden out there this week. There's a lot, almost in terms of sum total, they might be better than they were tonight in terms of health, don't you think?
Yeah, I think they're probably, even if Mechie's out, look, the truth of the matter is, at least from what I've seen from them the past few weeks, I think Mechie and Billingsley, both for Alabama, have been playing with some substantial minor injury. Billingsley is not running anything like the player that I've seen in previous years, and I've seen him avoid contact, especially like celebrating touchdowns and things. People go up for a chest bump and he's like, whoa, whoa, I think he's hurt. And Saban himself has said that Mechie's been playing through some injury from last year. I think he maybe had surgery on it, didn't fully heal. It's a little mysterious. So I do think there's something to all that. Let me, if you don't mind, let me just go ahead and acknowledge there are a lot of super chats for people that were their Alabama fans. Muncho Mango, appreciate that. Super chatted a while back. Joseph L. super chatted about the game and gave us basically saying, well, what he said was all that, you know, y'all are good. All the media outlets missed this pick. Only stats you can't account for is the GOAT Saban. So I appreciate that one. We'll try to catch up on them. Heisman, maybe this is an interesting point to sort of vary it up a little bit. Taylor Melville gave us a super chat, which I, again, appreciate it, and said, love the content, guys. Roll Tide. Bryce Young solidified his grip on the Heisman. I don't think there's any doubt on that, right?
Like, no, there's
not. Bryce Young's going to win the Heisman in a landslide now.
Yeah, and even if Alabama lost this game, in the second half, I think Bryce Young got. I think Bryce Young won the Heisman in the first half. And he did the flip play was cool, the run was cool, but he was throwing daggers. And I do think that we see what happened to that Alabama offense. Here's an interesting question, and maybe we get off of this game at some point, but it's just such a shock, and it's so interesting to me. Here's something I'll put out there, Josh, and I'll let you kind of chew on it. Seeing what happened to that Alabama offense after Jameson Williams went out last week against Auburn, is it fair to say that, like, as long as they got Jameson Williams, losing Mechie isn't nearly as big of a blow, given the gap between and scheme-wise what Alabama's got behind Mechie and what he does in that offense versus what Jameson Williams does?
Mechie got almost no separation from McCreary when Williams went out, and that was a really big problem for Alabama because it changed the way Auburn had to defend them. They didn't have to have two safeties over the top because they really were not worried about anybody Alabama had blowing past them. Mechie changes the game because you have to get a safety over the top. Mechie absolutely will beat guys at the snap. And that was, you know, that was something that you, it just changes the way you play defense. And again, that's, in my opinion, it's probably why Georgia wasn't getting the pressure people expected him to. So yeah, I totally think that's true. And again, Mechie is a big time player for them, makes a lot of plays in the short game and the passing game, but I don't think he's been 100%. I think they probably would have benefited from him being healthier in a playoff game, but I'm not sure they're going to take a huge step back. But if they lose Williams, I think it's a completely different team. He is a unique piece for what they're trying to do. And from a scheme perspective, they can replace Mechie. But from a scheme perspective, without Williams, they end up in the same position Georgia was in, where they can't actually threaten over the top. And so the defense can squat on everything. And even when you get a play, like all their shots to Bowers, you're being tackled immediately. And that just really, really changes the game. And we talked a lot about Bowers and people giving props. Man, I want to say that kid is an absolute stud. I mean, that's a first-round pick tight end if I've ever seen one.
Yeah.
Phenomenal football player, incredible catches, incredibly physical, incredibly athletic. The problem for Bowers is he's being asked to carry an offense, and it's the same point I made about Notre Dame, like in 2018. They had NFL tight ends on that team. They were phenomenal all year. You cannot put up 40 points in a game throwing to the tight end as your primary receiver. He's somebody that will make a team with a good receiving core elite, but because you can convert first downs, but he doesn't give you true explosiveness. Now, the one thing, let me ask this. Do you think Georgia could be a different team if Pickens is actually relatively healthy and can run vertical routes? Because I do think there's a possibility that could change things up for them a bit.
Yeah, I think they could. But like you said last week, I think he's Jalen Waddle last year for Alabama. They're putting him out there kind of decoy. Even when Kirby Smart said they have a package for him, that means he's not involved in the entire offense. He didn't play a lot tonight. I can't see between now and 3 weeks from now, he's going to get that much better. And I am really skeptical on skill players and corners coming back from an ACL, their first year back, because you do all this physical therapy to get back to where you can get on the field, but you're still not there for another year. It used to be a career ender. So a year and a half, 2 years is good. He blew his ACL in spring training. So I think that he'll be out there, but Georgia's got talent on that team, and you got to take somebody off the field to put him out there. And I just don't think that tonight he had that one catch on an underthrown ball against a freshman corner, which that's another guy that may not be on the field for Alabama. Other than that, I didn't see anything from him. And to your point about Bowers, other than Georgia fans, so if any non-Georgia fan was watching this game tonight, Alabama fans included, who know the roster, do they know of any other wide receiver on this team based on their play tonight? They don't. And that's a huge problem, which gets us into, I want to get a little bit off Alabama, Georgia, because I don't want to go an hour on just that. Josh, let's talk about playoff scenarios. And I'm going to give you my top four, my playoffs, if I were on that committee and I was picking my top four, it'd be these four in this order, which I think gets us into kind of a matchup discussion. Alabama, number one. Michigan, should they win tonight, number two, even though they really haven't impressed me tonight, but I think it's kind of a letdown game for them. Georgia, number three. Cincinnati, number four. Have you seen enough from Michigan this year to think that they could give Georgia fits too? Or is it, since so much goes through the run with them, are they going to have a real hard time and a real tough matchup against Georgia?
Yeah, the I think personally the reality is that Michigan's going to struggle badly with Georgia. I think Georgia, if they play Michigan, could rout them. Something we talked about a lot when we were doing even the Ohio State Michigan game. I'm trying to pull up that model now if I can. Michigan is allowing over 90% of opponent rushing averages, and they're like an 82% pass defense. They have a reputation for being a good defense, and they are relatively good, but they're more than anything, I think they're sound and physical. Right now they happen to be playing an Iowa team that it's extremely anemic on offense, so it works well. I think Georgia's efficiency, it'll be interesting to see how Michigan handles it, but that's the question, right? I mean, can Michigan really slow down Georgia's offense? But I think Georgia can get 25 or more on Michigan. But on the offensive side of the ball, I really have zero confidence that Michigan can score on Georgia almost at all. I don't know if you agree with me, but their offense is so, at times the quarterback play has been pretty good. I mean, they've scored two touchdowns in this game against Iowa. One of them came on a trick play where Iowa bit, a halfback pass. And another one was one like swing pass where Corum broke free.
Right.
And they haven't really done a whole hell of a lot outside that. I don't think they're going to score on Georgia. I think that game's going to be ugly. I do think they're going to put Michigan 2 and Georgia 3 because, one, it's academic, right? It depends. It matters a little bit for where you place the bowl because they try not to give the lower seed the advantage in that. But Michigan is going to be the conference champion with a better record. And the strength of schedule is relatively – this is kind of a screwed up thing, right? Because you talk about strength of schedule and that favors Michigan right now. But that really depends, you know, college football siloed. We said it all the time, right? So that kind of depends a little bit on how equal you view the conferences, because I think Michigan has played a tougher set of the Big Ten than maybe Georgia has played of the SEC, but I'm not really sure that the Big Ten is as good. In fact, I don't think they are as good as the SEC. You know, I do think that Georgia's schedule is probably a little harder in that regard, but I do think they're going to put Michigan 2. You get to say you put the conference champion 2. You got to put the team with a better record 2. You don't have to – if they put Georgia with more losses as a non-champ, it would be a riot. And I think that makes everyone happy. And they have hinted in the past that if they had a situation where you would have an immediate rematch, they would try to avoid it. And I think they are going to put Cincinnati 4 because to put Georgia 4 and have them immediately play Alabama, I think it's something you want to avoid from a, like, everyone as fans watching it standpoint. But I also think from a fairness standpoint.
Yeah, I do too.
If Georgia and Alabama are the two best teams, let them beat the teams from the other conferences first. And if they meet again, let it be because they're the two best teams. Don't put them in and just force them to knock each other out. It's completely fair to split them up and give, because you're giving someone a chance to beat both of them. So I think you're going to end up Michigan 2, Georgia 3, Cincinnati 4.
And dropping Georgia, just even if Alabama wasn't in the playoffs, dropping Georgia to 4 in this scenario is absurd. And there's a lot of people I've seen that say Georgia shouldn't be in the playoffs at all. That is so unbelievably stupid that I'm embarrassed that people are actually saying that.
The problem, right, is have you paid attention to how Georgia won the games they won? I'm trying to just jump in, but yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right?
So Georgia murdered their schedule except for Clemson. Georgia was far more dominant against their schedule, which, by the way, included two Power Fives out of conference and an SEC East schedule. They were far more dominant than Cincinnati was against a G5 schedule. So, no, shut up. And then Somebody said earlier that Baylor should be in over Georgia because they're a conference champion. Baylor lost to 5-7 TCU. Baylor beat Texas State 29-20. Get out of here with that business. Just stop. The only people that are saying this stuff are saying it because they're basically just saying, I don't like the SEC, so I don't think two SEC teams, I don't want to see two SEC teams in there, which is silly. But these are also the people that want 16-team playoffs. All right, so here's another thing that I think is interesting. And look, I don't think Alabama's going to overlook Cincinnati at all. That's not it's Nick Saban's DNA. There's not any of that. But even if Michigan is a bad – Georgia is a bad matchup for Michigan, which I think it is, Michigan is a good enough opponent that we're not going to see a situation where Georgia can like sneak ahead and doubly prepare for Alabama, right? Like Georgia is good enough that Michigan is good enough that Georgia is going to have to put their full attention to Michigan and really only have that follow week to prepare for Alabama should Alabama win. Is that correct?
Yeah. And to be honest, I think Cincinnati, would you agree with me? I think there's a real chance Cincinnati's in the same boat. Cincinnati's a good team.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Alabama's not going to be able to just skip them to play Georgia. I mean, they're going to be playing both those teams with everything they have. So yeah, they're not going to overlook either one. Both of these teams are going to have to earn it. And it's funny to me that people want to knock them down now because Alabama beat them. And it's this weird circular thing where Alabama was not doing as well against teams as Georgia had done. So Alabama sucked. But then Alabama blows out Georgia, so Georgia must suck. But Alabama was viewed as sucking because they were struggling with like Arkansas and close game for a while with Tennessee or Auburn, and Georgia beat them out. So maybe this is just more indicative of the fact that college football is a game where teams can struggle off and on with different teams, and you shouldn't play transitive property. But, man, I go back to the fact that I watched Auburn play Penn State, and those did not look like uneven teams. And
right.
I mean, Penn State, I know, wasn't the greatest team in the Big Ten, but they gave everybody Sean
Clifford,
a hard time.
A healthy Sean Clifford away from winning 9 games.
Right. And Auburn got them healthy. And, you know, Auburn was 6-6, right, this year. So they struggled mightily in the SEC. So maybe I want to touch on a few more super chats just to give credit. Joseph L. said, I put 4 units on Georgia. Never been so happy to lose money. You know, hey, man. I understand. I've always said that if you have a team and you want to, they're in a big game, bet against them so you can be happy either way. So I respect that. Shane said I was kidding last week when I said Bama by 40, but I'll take Bama by 17. Said he loves our show and I really appreciate it. I appreciate all the support a lot of you guys have given us. There's some nasty comments actually earlier. One of which was trying to dox us. So I had to ban the guy. It's not something we do very often. Couple things here that I think I want to try to knock out the ones in the SEC championship game and then get on to a couple more general topics. Does that work for you, Daniel?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Eric DeLoyan said, I'm going to tell you all why most people miss this pick. Is it because we didn't realize how much better the West is? Grind is compared to the East. And maybe, so that's a slightly different point, right? And does he have a good point? I think we even sort of were trying to address it, but is there something to the fact that the West is a grind? That yeah, Alabama I mean, played a lot of, maybe not elite teams, but a lot of, frankly, ranked quality teams in a row. Yeah,
I made this exact point, but you glossed right over it. But that's okay. That's okay. Sometimes I say stuff and it's not important. I get it. But yeah, that's the point, right? Like Alabama, when they lost to A&M, it was after a bunch of, it was in the middle of a pretty tough stretch, right? Now, I don't think they get the same excuse for Auburn. That game was kind of like that game was kind of inexcusable, but in sum total, what you see is like everybody is high on Notre Dame right now because they're killing everybody. They played 3 9-loss teams in November. 3. Of course they look good. Like 6 games ago, they lost to Cincinnati, right? They played since they lost to Cincinnati, they played 0 teams with a winning record, not a single one. And so the point I made earlier today was everybody's like, you know, Alabama doesn't belong in if they lose even close to Georgia. And I'm like, look, Alabama got no credit for beating Arkansas, like none. And really, that was a two-touchdown win. They went prevent, gave up a late touchdown, but it was a prevent touchdown. They beat them basically by two touchdowns. They got no credit for that win. And we criticized them for that win a little bit. Arkansas dragged Texas. The three ranked teams in the Big 12 all beat Texas by one score. So they all got credit for beating Texas by one score, a 5-6-7 Texas team. Alabama beats the team that murdered Texas and got killed for it. And that's the different, like, it's not just SEC West. I think SEC in general, that's the different, like, the different levels of credit you get. You get credit for beating a team in conference in another conference, but in the SEC, you don't get the same amount of credit. And it's a double standard, and it's kind of frustrating.
Well, I mean, like, we saw Ole Miss play Louisville, who was not a good team, but a thorn in people's side, right? 30-24 with Clemson, throttled Duke, throttled Syracuse, and Louisville, Ole Miss and Kentucky murdered Louisville. 43-24 Ole Miss at the start. It was a lot worse than that, honestly. Kentucky beat them 52-21. And people want to call Kentucky an average team, and they played with them like a tinker toy. And to be clear, Wake Forest, who's currently playing the ACC Championship, they beat Louisville 37-34. Virginia beat them 34-33. North Carolina State was the worst loss they suffered. It was 28-13. The two SEC teams they played beat them by whatever score they wanted to. So it just bothers me when people don't want to, like you're talking about the Arkansas-Texas data point, when people don't want to talk about that stuff. And people are joking in the chat. I know we're going to be called by homers. You know, we used to be SEC fans, et cetera, et cetera. The thing is, you know, it is what it is, right? We try to call the shots like we see them. And the reality right now, quite frankly, is that there's probably not nearly as many SEC team ranked as should be if you want to base it more on quality. And I do think this year we felt like early in the year maybe the conference was down because teams were struggling against each other. But, I mean, feel free to tell me, guys, like what were – Memphis over Mississippi State was bad, right? South Carolina got destroyed by Clemson. That was bad. Other than those games, what's the thing that makes you think the SEC isn't better? Because the data points we have are pretty dominant, and there really aren't a lot of suggestions to the contrary.
Yeah, and look, this is the perfect example. You're getting people, haters, as we say. Texas and Louisville aren't very good. Well, Texas in conference, the three top 10 Big 12 teams beat them by one score. I'm okay with you saying Texas is trash, but then you're going to turn around and say that if Oklahoma State won today, they belong in the playoffs when they can only beat that trash team by one score and Arkansas dragged them. And then turn around and say that Alabama sucks because they only beat them by one score. That's the issue. Okay, Louisville's not very good. Ole Miss murdered them. Louisville didn't get murdered in conference in the ACC play. Somebody said, okay, well, you need to just admit the SEC is trash. SEC is weaker for sure, but Tennessee, with no quarterback, almost beat Pittsburgh, who played in the ACC Conference Championship game tonight. I don't even know if they won or not.
It's still going on now, right? But they're leading. Yeah, I mean, Tennessee was playing Milton, who was horrible. And they replaced him with Hooker, and that's when they became in any way competitive in the SEC. And I think they put Hooker in that game, and it was really clear if they played Hooker, they would have beaten Pittsburgh.
Right, right. So we're saying Mississippi State beat a ranked, I think an 8-win NC State team.
Yep.
Beat the crap out of them by two touchdowns. So, like, it's like, okay, those teams might suck. Like, you can say that Mississippi State sucks or Arkansas sucks, but it's compared to what? That's my problem. And people in the comments are doing the exact thing that I said they're doing. It's like, okay, if Texas sucks, why are they getting credit for them? If they don't suck, if some other team doesn't suck in your conference, then when an SEC team beats them, they should get credit for it. So when you've got conference champions getting murdered or beating or losing to teams in the SEC that SEC teams will get credit for beating, that's a double standard. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I will say Big Ten versus SEC, and we've kind of held that those are two probably the best conferences.
I like the Big Ten this year.
I like the Big Ten. That's a very different discussion, and we're talking about Michigan versus versus Georgia. And I probably, well, people would have taken it as a shot. I think the SEC might be a little bit better. And I was just saying, comparing strength of schedule rankings between conferences doesn't really work, because the lack of connectivity in the data for, you know, for, if that makes sense to people, means that you can't, it's not an even comparison, because it kind of, it actually kind of has to assume that the Big Ten and the SEC are relatively equal, and it's more just ranking who played the harder part of their conference, if that makes sense. But when you talk about the Pac-12 and the Big 12 and the ACC versus at least the SEC, based off data points we have between sort of between all three conferences, I don't think it's a contest. And the thing with the Big Ten is, you know, we were high on Ohio State. We felt like when they were clicking, their offense and verticality was the team that was the most capable of beating Georgia. But we talked about that they were a flawed team. And we also were very clear that we were skeptical of the improvements they made given the teams they were playing. Michigan State had a particular weakness that we called that game to be lopsided, because we knew Ohio State could exploit them. But they played a lot of bad teams and looked better. They also lost to Oregon. And right. I don't know why, like, we want to brush that aside. And I know it was an opening game and Stroud wasn't the same, et cetera, et cetera. But then if you look at that and you look at how they played against Michigan, I don't know that that was a total freak incident, right? There were real flaws with that team. They did show up again later, and I don't think you can ignore it. And then that by extension, and like Auburn and Penn State, that all colors it a little bit. And I do think it makes it tough.
And look, I'm on this thing, Josh, and I don't care who I piss off in Big 12 country, but when your team plays 30 out-of-conference games and none of them are include wins against a Power 5 team with a winning record, and your best, as an entire conference, your best out-of-conference results are a win over BYU, who finished the season beating USC 35-31 and barely beat Arizona and lost to Boise, BYU and a 3-9 Nebraska team are the two best data points from the Big 12. I don't want to hear people coming at me that the SEC is overrated or whatever. Like, that is what's frustrating me, is like, we don't have these properly connected data points, because the Big 12, there's three teams in the Big 12 this year that ducked Power 5 out of conference. And then they turn around and circle the wagons in conference and they beat each other. And like, oh, yeah, our conference champion lost to TCU. And yeah, our conference champion beat Texas State 29-20. But hey, Alabama struggled with Auburn, so the SEC sucks. Give me a break.
Yeah, and when we talk about like beating TCU and they're 5-7, and again, well,
losing to TCU.
I'm sorry, losing to TCU. Well, TCU lost to SMU 42-34, right? And they beat Cal 34-32 in an even game. So there's all these additional data points that we have, especially with the Big 12, to go, okay, I saw Texas play Arkansas. I saw TCU play these other teams before they beat Baylor. Yeah, I think that's a conference that is probably not very good, if I had to guess, that someone has to win. And it happened to be that these teams were better than other teams. We've beat this point to death. Okay. But that is okay. That is the way it goes. Yeah. Kiltak9 said a super chat, and he says, why is it that people don't realize expansion might be the best thing for the SEC and probably the Big Ten? And maybe that's a good way to segue, because I think it's a good question.
True. It's absolutely true. I mean, and there's a couple of things. Like, we've been on this for years with playoff expansion, and conference expansion is the same way. It's going to be a couple of haves and a lot of have-nots. But, like, the point we just made about the Big 12, and they had 30 out-of-conference data points, and most of them were against G5 and FCS teams. Most of these data points were bad. They only played two, I think, Power 5 teams with a winning record and loss. So these were all bad. And you're taking Texas and Oklahoma out of the Big 12. That's bad for the Big 12. It's honestly bad for college football. But let's expand the playoffs. This is the point that people get at us about being elitists and SEC homers or whatever. We're trying to save college football. You expand to 12 and Alabama losing to Auburn last week doesn't matter. And you get teams that recruit and that are on an elite level in terms of a roster. they can have two, maybe three mulligans in a season and still make the playoffs, those are going to be your Cinderellas, not Coastal Carolina, not the highest ranked G5, not the MAC champion. They are not going to go on a run, because the thing is, and look, Cincinnati might beat Alabama, right? The thing that's not going to happen in a 12 or 16 team playoff is a Cincinnati going in on a run of four teams in a row that they have to beat, where they can't prepare for a month for somebody. That's what's never going to happen. You know who might do that? 2010 Alabama, 2015 Ohio State, teams that weren't in the playoffs, weren't in the postseason. We're trying to save college football from these teams dominating year in and year out.
Yeah, I think the problem is that a lot of people don't want to admit that these Big Ten and SEC teams are actually better. Mm-hmm. And so there's this delusion that if you look, if we just get UCF in there in 2017, UCF would have won the title because they beat Auburn. I mean, they beat an Auburn team that wasn't really competitive with Georgia once Kerryon Johnson got hurt late in the Alabama game. But sure, I mean, that's the idea. But the reality, if you do expansion, is all these SEC and Big Ten teams are just going to end up winning most of their games, and they're, you know, or whoever the top conferences are, put it that way, and the teams that have the most talent, they're going to win those games in there. It's just going to be kind of a bunch of blowouts in the first round. And then the upsets, like you said, are going to be the Alabama team that managed to lose that Iron Bowl to Auburn. That's going to get healthier and win the game anyway. So,
Farina came in with another big super chat, and he makes a good point. So why don't you tackle that one too?
Yeah. And he says, as an OSU fan or Ohio State fan, I think it's safe to say the SEC is better than Big Ten, but it's a relatively small gap. We're in the gap between the Big Ten and the other three P5 is fairly large. I think that's fairly true. I do think that any gap between the SEC and the Big Ten is not overly substantial, and I think they can probably play on the same field to a large extent. But I think the gap between them and a lot of the other conferences may be really, really problematic. I was just making the point with the, again, strength of schedule stuff is a little weird from a stat perspective. But I don't know. It's really hard for me to judge where the Big Ten is versus the SEC for a variety of reasons, partly due to matchups. I don't know that I'm trying to think all the out of conference games. One thing, it's funny. Everybody always lauds nine conference games. And I think maybe people are starting to warm up to our point. There are way too many teams playing nine conference games and not playing meaningful out of conference games. It's making it really stinking hard to judge these conferences against each other anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's a point that we've made, and you're right. People, I don't know that people really appreciate it yet. Before I get into my response, Eric asked, what am I drinking? Russell's Single Barrel. So Kevin Noon turned me on to Russell's when I was drinking Wild Turkey Rare Breed, and it's the same distillery, and their single barrel and their sort of some of their higher end stuff with Russell's are really good. And then I picked up this Detling from a friend the other day who is in an area where they have this. I think they're in like five states. It's made in Alabama. This is their 4-year. It's really good. Their cask strength is really good. Their green label regular stuff is really bad. Okay. So yeah, that's the other thing, that the 9-game versus 8-game thing is funny, because you've pointed out how a lot of conferences have added this 9th game, but they've added it with, you know, Maryland Rutgers or the Big 12, who they play 9 conference games, don't play anybody out of conference, and then we don't know if they're good or not. They might be really good. Like, I think 2018 Oklahoma was actually really good. 2017 Oklahoma was really good. Since then, Big 12 has not played good football. And the numbers that we've got show that, like, a Big 12 schedule this year wasn't much better than a good G5 schedule, right? Big 10, on the other hand, they play 9 conference games. And this year, Maryland wasn't that bad. Like, Maryland's not Vanderbilt, where they have been in years past. That playing them this year was not bad. They beat West Virginia, I think, beat them by 2 touchdowns. So it's just disjointed. And if we played an 8-2, we'd have so many cross-connective data points that would tell us that, like, your 8 games in your conference was this tough versus another conference that was a lot tougher. And then we don't have to have these complaints about the beauty contest and the guessing game when it comes to playoff time, Josh, right? Isn't that ultimately the best part about doing an 8+2 is it takes away some of the guesswork at the end of the year?
I mean, I think so. If you could get them to play more out-of-conference games, it would take away the guesswork. And I think we've kind of gone to the wrong model where people wanted a bunch of conference games and then they wanted a really inclusive, expanded playoff because it shifted. It basically made the rankings of the teams or relative quality a mystery so that you could make the playoff more interesting. And maybe this is an angle I haven't really vocalized, right? Just because you don't know who the best conference is doesn't mean that one conference isn't a lot better than the other.
Right.
So the result you were going to get was going to be blowouts. And maybe it's not the blowouts you expect, but you were going to get blowouts because you were going to have misconceptions. Isn't it a lot smarter to have the teams play out of conference games during the season so that when you play this, when you seed the playoff, you can reliably seed with teams that are all really good teams that should be in the playoffs. So you have competitive playoff games with teams that deserve to be there. I mean, is that a crazy, like, why is this a crazy take? Like, why do we want to put it all off? And just honestly, it's blinding ourselves to it with this idea of inclusivity. But here's the problem, right? Is football, and this is one of the reasons I like it, doesn't matter how much you want a team to win a game, they got to go win the game. And a lot of times I think we pick teams or people pick teams or rank teams based off who they want to win, not who will actually win,
yep.
Who is actually better. And I maybe on that realm, I want to touch on it. I think I have a note here. I think it was Mike Foreno that said this. He said he thinks Ohio State beats Georgia but loses to Bama, and he thinks Michigan would lose to Georgia but beat Bama. I think that's a fair question. Like, and I think that's maybe a fair take that Ohio State, because of the matchups, the same way Alabama beat Georgia, might be able to beat Georgia. I think Michigan, like we talked about, is a bad set of matchups. I'll have to delve in further. Might be better against Alabama because of their pass rush, but. You know, we don't really get the opportunity to flesh these things out. And honestly, we are guessing to an insane degree when we look at Big Ten versus SEC. And
that's where we have the best data, right? Like, because the isolationists are the Pac-12 and the Big 12. And so, Josh, here's another point that I'd love for you to touch on. People forget this sometimes because we have a resident Iowa fan that always gets at us on Twitter because he's one of those a win is a win is a win guys. And I was kind of going off on the Big 12 this week or today because it's kind of – I guess that's my thing this year. And he's like, nobody had good OOC schedules this year. But isn't the point less about when you have an 8+2 – isn't it less about having the two best out-of-conference teams play one another and more about, like, okay, maybe you played a Pac-12 and a Big 12 team that weren't very good, but you struggled with them. Like, knowing that out-of-conference, like, regardless of how good the teams you played are, how you actually play against those teams, if they were bad, is also data that's really important.
Yeah, we just got, of course, we got a message in here. Eliminate all opinion polls and the playoff committee. Only conference champs in the playoff, and all conference champs are in the playoff.
It's stupid. I'm sorry. It's stupid.
It was just 3 years ago.
That the Pac-12 ago, 2019.
Well, I was going to say when Washington was a three-loss team that had lost to the number 5 SEC team and won the Pac-12. They did not need to be in the playoff, period.
Like I thought you were going to go 76-5 Ohio State over MAC champion.
If you want to talk about every champion from every conference and you get in the G5, yeah, the MAC champion had lost 76-5 and they were like a 5-loss team or something. It was Miami of Ohio. I can't remember how many games they lost, but they lost 76-5 to Ohio State. It's I'm going to have to put you in timeout because you are kind of spamming.
That's the message you gave earlier, right? What you said was people are wanting to rank and put teams in that they want, not necessarily the teams they know that are better or the best. And that's exactly what that is, right? Saying all conference champions belong in the playoffs is effectively asking us to do a rain dance where we all believe that winning the MAC because look, Kent State was in the MAC conference championship tonight at 7-5 and lost got murdered at all three of their Power Five opponents this year, we're supposed to pretend that that's the same accomplishment as going even 9-3 in the Big Ten, and it's not.
Yeah, it's just not. And this game is not balanced. It's not balanced year to year. But it goes back to the point I'm making. We don't play out a conference game, so we don't really know how these conferences compare to each other. And if we did, like the Washington example, 2011 LSU, one of the big reasons that Alabama played LSU in a rematch that year is that LSU had played Oregon in the opener, and Oregon was one of, like, what were they, number three? They were number four, right, behind Oklahoma State. And LSU throttled them. And so we knew, that's not a shame. That was a good data point. That let us know where the conferences were at. That was a good, helpful thing. And just waiting for that throttling to happen to the playoff is hoping for a result that you're not going to get. It's hoping that it's Nikki G. It's funny, like, which brings me to my next point. Don't smoke crack. Like, you know, just because, like, you don't want Oregon to play LSU. And the reality is you don't want to play LSU because you know they're going to lose, so they won't end up in the playoff. So instead, you want them to play in the playoff so they can get blown out 40-0 in the playoff instead. Because LSU at the end of 2011 would have annihilated Oregon. So, that's all I got to say about that, right?
And doesn't it make bowls worse? Because we're putting teams in the playoffs at that point highly unmatched. Because let's say we go to 12 or 16, and you got 1 versus 16. Instead of 16 playing 15 in a bowl, they're playing 1, and 15's playing 2. That's not fun for me. Like, I don't want to see 2020 Alabama play Coastal Carolina. I do not want to see that game. Alabama was a mash unit at the end of the Ohio State game. I don't want to see, like, tonight, Mechie blew out his ACL. I don't want to see Alabama's quarterback break their shoulder playing Coastal Carolina winning 59-7. When I want to see Coastal Carolina playing Mississippi State, like, that's what I want to see. Not 1 versus 16. This is ridiculous. Why we have to pretend to protect feelings. And for this, like, maybe you can touch on this a little bit too, Josh. And this is fun. Like, I like that this is a safe space for us to kind of get a little bit angsty. This notion that if we go to 16, these G5 teams are all of a sudden are going to be competitive with Alabama because of access. Can you touch on why that is or is not ridiculous?
We're still seeing in the thing here that all five Power Five champs and the highest G5 champion at large bids. I don't know what more to say. I feel like we've said it way too many times. But yeah, there's this idea that if you get someone like UCF in the playoff, that they're going to turn things around and that the playoff is the only reason teams haven't been successful. Let me ask you a question, okay? Oklahoma's been in the playoffs year after year and were blown out repeatedly. Do you feel like Oklahoma is in a better state than they were when they made the playoffs? What was the first year? 20? Well, I mean, they were in for several years, but like 2015, 2017. Do you really feel like they're more competitive than they were then? Because I don't.
No.
And they got there because they were already a talented program that was towards the top. And you know what? They lost badly over and over again, and it hurt their brand, I think.
And that's Oklahoma.
Notre Dame getting in the playoff and getting blown out, I don't think has been a positive for them. Washington made the playoff in 2016. They got their exposure. They were the best team they had, played Alabama. They got outclassed and lost. Did not help them. I mean, there's a ton of data to suggest the fact that getting in the playoff and losing does not help you. And I think these G5 teams that get in, again, it's based off, you have to make this assumption that they're going to get in and actually be competitive. I think the reality, you know, we're homers right now just because the SEC happens to be better. And the fact that we say that and we're from the South makes us homers. But it's just the reality right now. And if you put these teams in, they're going to lose probably by a decent margin. And it's just going to reinforce people's mindset. And I think maybe this is an interesting thing to turn it around a little bit. Like, the Cincinnati-Alabama game is probably going to have a big impact on the way the G5 is perceived going forward, because Cincinnati really needs to look like they belong, not to win the game, but to look like they belong. if they get in that game and they look like they don't belong, man, I think that's going to have a really, really serious impact on the way, how seriously G5 teams are, like an undefeated G5 team is, when you start getting to playoff rankings.
Okay, so I'm going to answer that. But first, I did a little digging, Josh. NIU won the MAC tonight. They actually play a playoff team, assuming Michigan wins. They lost 63-10. They lost by 3 touchdowns to Western Michigan in their last game of the season. We're going to put them in the playoffs. No, thank you. Utah won the MAC, or Mountain West. Wyoming beat them 44-7 2 weeks ago. BYU beat them by 2 touchdowns. Boise beat them 27-3.
Utah State. But yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Louisiana, who went 11-1 this year and just beat App State by 8 points, lost to Texas by a score of 38-18. I don't mind having an FBS where the G5 is included. I mind when we pretend like playing a schedule where Texas beats you 38-18. That's your toughest game. And Texas is the 8th toughest opponent on a P5 schedule. Like, that's what I mind, that we pretend that those are the same. Cincinnati is different because Cincinnati went out and scheduled road games at Indiana, at Notre Dame, and they do play in a better G5 conference. And they drag people. So I'm okay with them being in the playoffs this year. To your point, I think Cincinnati will look competitive because there's being able to prepare for a month when you're a reasonably talented team, prepare for a month for somebody in this year who has flaws. And this is the best year of all years for a G5 to make it, because there is not the same gap between the 1 and 2 best teams and everybody else that there has been. But yeah, I think it's truly important that Cincinnati look like they belong because they're playing for all the G5s. But I think we're going to put too much weight on this one game, one way or the other, and be like overly influenced by it, and not realize that, like, if Cincinnati loses this game by 8 points to Alabama, not realize that this is Alabama team that 2 weeks ago almost lost to Auburn, and this year is just a weird year. But yes, I do think it's very important for Cincinnati to show up.
Yeah. Stephen Light with a super chat. Man, I just want to give him a shout out because he's been following us
every week.
Every week. Penn State fan. Feeling the pain. We've been negative on Penn State. I swear it wasn't hating. I don't think people take it as hating now. The shame of it is people take it as hating when they're doing well. And then, you know, like a lot of the stuff we're saying ended up being kind of right. And he's stuck around and I think kind of given us credit for it. And I appreciate that. Because it's not fun for us to say that teams maybe aren't what they're supposed to be or what they're thought to be, because people don't like hearing it. It's tough. You want to take this comment from Lamar, because I think it's a really good point.
Yeah, it's great. Lamar says, basically, another friend of the program who's been around forever, Lamar is like, the number 4 team is a lot of times better off had they not gone in and been sacrificed to number 1 and just played a bowl game against somebody that they could possibly beat. Like, to your Oklahoma point, Josh, which is the best one out there, does Oklahoma getting, because I'm not kidding, LSU could have beaten them by 80 points in that game. I think they had like almost 50 at the half in 2019. Is Oklahoma better off losing that bad to LSU in 2019 than they are maybe beating somebody in a New York Six Bowl? Really? Yeah. Like, I don't think they are.
It's funny. Somebody said they were competitive in all but that one game. I mean, the 45-34 against Alabama looked better than that game really was. They had to come back to make the score look respectable. The Georgia game was close. And then the Clemson game was 37-17. So they really had – it's really just – the 27 Georgia game was the one competitive game they were in. Unless I'm just missing something, but I don't think I am.
Didn't they get blanked 1 year, like 31-0, or was that Ohio State?
That was Ohio State against Clemson. Yeah.
And then it was the 2018 game against Alabama was 28-0. And Alabama basically went into prevent in the second quarter. And every time they needed to go get another touchdown to keep a two-score lead, they got one. That game was not really competitive. But the 2019 game is the best one because that to me, Lamar's point is right. Like, how much better off is here's a good example. Last year, Oklahoma wasn't in the playoffs, murdered Florida, had a lot of momentum that fueled them to their 5-point win over Tulane in the first game of the season. Had a lot of momentum coming out of last year instead of being deflated, right? Like, I think that there's something to this.
Yeah, I do. There's a lot to all this stuff, right? And there's the opt-outs and everything else. And one of the big arguments is that we should expand the playoff because guys are opting out. I hate arguments like that because it's the definition of a slippery slope, right? Mm-hmm. We do a playoff, which means people don't care about anything but the playoff. So we need to expand the playoff so that the people that don't care will play because they'll be in a playoff. And the big thing that I keep talking about, and to me, the 27 UCF Auburn game is an example, and it's to Auburn's point. That game only exists because you don't have an expanded playoff. So they got to play an Auburn team that they were able to beat in what was a close game. If you expand it, those games die and they end up playing, I forget who they would have played that year, but it was like Alabama or I think it was Alabama or like Alabama or Georgia. And I don't think that would have gone as well. And so you lose a lot of, you know, like 10 versus 13 kind of bowl games that are really, really important and fun for a postseason in exchange for others.
There's a comment here, Josh, that I'm going to touch on, but I want you to double touch on. Expand not to 12 because 9 through 12 probably don't deserve to be there, but all Power 5 champs and the highest G5 champ and 6 at large bid fixes more issues than an 18 playoff. No. Again, Michigan beat a G5 champ 63-10. And this notion, Josh, you've pointed this out a lot of times. You deserve a lot of credit for this because I didn't start saying it until you said it and I stole it from you. G5 is not a conference. So we need to stop treating them like a conference where you get to get 70 teams and get your best team. G5 is not a conference. So expanding to 12, I think, is ridiculous because it is entertaining the idea that the 12th best team not only is good enough to win a playoff, but actually deserves to be there at all. And Josh, isn't that part of why the regular season is so great in college football? Is like you kind of earn your way in and those losses in the regular season actually matter?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what they said, that's what makes the sport what it is, but I think that's just the reality of it. You know, a lot of people just want to get to the point where you play in the playoff and it's the whole season. And at some point, like if you take that to its most extreme, absurd degree, you just play the playoff as the entire season. And at some point you ought to realize that the result you're going to get is going to look exactly like the regular season that you're seeing now, just in single elimination playoff. So it's a touch more wild. It's not March Madness wild. It's really not. You're just going to have some good teams lose because they get a guy injured or something. Couple more super chats. Kiltech 9, the only thing that will happen if you expand the playoffs is coaches probably won't find new jobs before the end of the season. I don't know about that because Notre Dame their coach just left. And they had a realistic shot at a playoff bid and he bolted. And Stephen Light with another super chat. And again, I want to give him credit because of how much support he's given us. Honestly, I have to disagree, but I'm not 19. Wouldn't recruits prefer going to even a number 4 playoff team than a New Year's Six bowl game? Again, I don't think it really matters that much for recruiting. No. Frankly, I think it's more about brand name. But I think the reality for recruits is like UCF beating Auburn and not having to play a team of a higher caliber was the best thing that could have happened for them. Yep. And if they gotten in the playoff and then they'd lost to Alabama or Georgia, which they would have, bluntly, they would have. That would have, you would not be talking about UCF anymore, and they wouldn't have gotten any credit in 2018 either. Cincinnati playing Georgia close in a game that wasn't a playoff game last year was big for them. And that Georgia team, frankly, wasn't great at the end of the year because they'd suffered major injuries and they had a lot of people playing with minimal experience. I feel like I'm running out of steam. We've got some more Alabama super chats. Do you want to, or I say Alabama, Alabama, Georgia game super chats. Do you want to touch on any of those we want to mention, or at least name the people that gave them to us?
Yeah. And we got, let's say we got 5 to 10 minutes left tops. We're running out of steam, both of us. Taylor Melville said he felt like Alabama had a higher tempo and noticed we didn't run the play clock down as much. We said, this is one of our keys in the preview. We said, Alabama's got to come out with tempo and be more directed in their approach. Unless, like, the one time Bryce Young did a check at the line and snapped the ball with 3 seconds left, it was a disaster play tonight. And so, yeah, I think that was a huge part of it. Not just tempo doesn't just serve to keep the defense off schedule. It keeps, it simplifies and takes a lot of choices out of everybody's head and makes everybody very focused in what they do. It takes a lot of reads out, and I think that helped Bryce a lot. We bought into the Georgia hype, two sides of football. I said before the game, if UB makes UGA beat them throwing, they had a good chance of winning. Ironic, Daniel blamed spread on name brand. That was from Caleb Talks. I don't think that Georgia's defense is overhyped. I mean, again, now, Josh, and maybe you can touch on this a little bit, isn't it funny that now everybody wants to make Georgia out to be this bum team because they lost to, checks notes, Alabama?
It's honestly, it's bizarre. I mean, all we heard was Alabama was terrible because of the close game with LSU and Auburn. And look, they weren't playing well. Like, Alabama was not playing good offensive football against teams that, I don't think there's any doubt Georgia is a better defensive football team than Auburn. But they're maybe better in different ways, and we didn't really know how different. Auburn has decently good pass rushers, but their front seven is not elite. It's really not, and their ability to stop the inside run really isn't great. But their secondary is really good. Georgia does not have a secondary player anywhere near as good as McCurry. Would you agree with me on that?
Yeah, nobody on that field, I don't think, has one.
Yeah, so that there are matchup issues at play, but people were really just reacting, I think, overly negatively at Alabama. And we felt like we were really having to explain to people, like, stop overreacting to a couple close games in a tough schedule with specific matchups. And now, all of a sudden, a Georgia team that, like, shut Auburn down, destroyed Arkansas 37-0, and handled everyone else on their schedule to an insane degree is bad, or that we should have seen this coming. Like, I don't think there was anything to see this coming. There were reasons, like I talked about the fact that if there was a blowout, that it was more likely to be Alabama blowing out Georgia than the other way around, because the passing game, if it clicks, has the ability to do that. But Alabama has not clicked in the passing game. So, I just think the reality of it is Georgia is a really good football team. They played really good football. That was a very close game at the half. It got away from them a little bit. And like I said, Georgia was not equipped to play a game in the 40-point range. And I'm not sure, in a different set of circumstances, maybe, again, the holding thing, I think all that mattered. That game could have easily been a lot closer. So I still don't really know what happens if that same roster plays again. But I will say, the game you get in the playoff, if they do meet a game, is going to be a really different roster on both sides. So I don't know. I really don't even want to try to guess at what they're going to look like at this point.
Shane said, let's take a moment to give props to Alabama's offensive line. After the second drive, scoreless as they were, I turned to the wife and said, we're going to win this game. Worst case scenario, would have shown up immediately. And Josh, I think this is true. I texted you after Alabama's first drive, which was unsuccessful. I think they got maybe 20 yards, got a first down, something like that. And I said, that was basically something like, that was interesting. Was not the disaster I expected. And a lot of that had to do with the offensive line. How long into this game did you, let me rephrase it. When it was 10-0 Georgia, were you like, completely sold that Alabama was out of it, or had you seen enough to that point to think, okay, this is going a little differently than we maybe anticipated?
Yeah, it's funny too, reading even still some comments in there. The game was 10-0 Georgia at one point. I thought Alabama still had a very realistic shot to win the game, but I thought it was going about the way I thought it was going to go at that point. But what happened, I think, when Alabama scored, and especially when they scored again, there was a genuine emotional shift in the game. But the biggest thing is Alabama's offense just started clicking. And Georgia's offense, like we talked about, was going to struggle to hit 30 because they're very efficient. But you can't be that efficient against that good of a defense absent a real vertical passing game. And they just ended up being in a game that was something of a track meet, and they could not match it. I mean, and somebody's saying this, I think, like, Alabama, I felt like, was holding on for dear life, even in the second half, with the lead they had. They got a pick six that extended the lead, or that game would have been real, real tight at the end.
Right.
That was not a blowout by any means. It just wasn't. And I haven't been paying that much attention to the box score with it. But
Didn't the touchdown come after the pick six? So it would have been, if that touchdown came before the pick six, it would have been a 7-point game in the late third quarter.
Yeah, and I'm trying to, it's hard for me to see here. Interception touchdown. It was 17-31, and Georgia had the ball, and there was a pick six, and then Georgia turned around and scored and made it 24-38. So if you take that pick six drive away, it would have been 31-24. At the start of the fourth quarter. And statistically, I mean, Stetson Bennett threw for 340 yards. He had three touchdowns. The biggest thing is, kind of like I flagged, Georgia couldn't really run it. It was actually, interestingly, Alabama outgained Georgia on the ground, 115 to 109, 4.4 to carry to 3.6. Georgia was about 7.1 per attempt, but they had 450 yards of offense. So it was definitely not totally one-sided. And there was also some points late in the game, right, where Georgia chose not to opt for field goals because they were trying to score touchdowns.
And those are points. Those are points.
So that was, wow. And Pitt is just putting it away on West, Wake Forest now. Just had a pick six. I'd be watching Michigan, Iowa, but it refuses to run on my computer. So I'm kind of, once we get off, I'll probably flip that on.
And I want to remind everybody that's in the chat that's like, Michigan's killing Iowa, Michigan's going to kill Georgia or whatever. Iowa lost to Wisconsin 27-7, and their quote-unquote defensive problems when they give up points are entirely because of how bad their offense is or can be. And tonight is no different. Josh, I want you to touch on this, and then we can close it out. How important was it for Alabama tonight that they had a little bit of running game from Robinson? Like, how much of that played into their being able to be successful in everything else that they did?
I think it was a really big deal. I mean, and it was like 3 to 4 yards per carry, I think they got out of him. I'm trying to 16 for 55. Math is hard. I'm just going to type this in a calculator.
And remember, a lot of those yardage, a lot of those runs late were just to salt the game away. So I think he was 5 yards a carry at when the game mattered.
Yeah, I think it was really important because it kept Georgia. They were able to run up the middle with enough success that Georgia wasn't able to just do the pin their ear back, rush around the edge thing that Auburn did, where Auburn wasn't even trying to maintain run lanes. And if Alabama had any kind of run game, they would have just gouged them because there was nobody in the lanes. There was no one in the gaps. And so the ability to do that at some level was pretty darn important. But yeah, I mean, Trex 1490 said that Georgia was too conservative or on defense. And that was kind of to your point and something we touched on later. I don't know if you saw that early part of the video, but go back and rewatch it because we touched on that. Alabama, I think they were maybe a bit too conservative, but Alabama was able to get the ball out fast enough that they had to keep safeties over the top. And Alabama spread them out too much to where Georgia was used to having a bunch of guys in the box and they couldn't bring pressure. And then Gelato, of course, where the Georgia fans at. I mean, this is Alabama's night. It'll be, they got two hard games in front of them. They're probably, I would think, probably going to have to play Georgia again, or a team that's better than Georgia if Michigan beats them, right? That's probably the best way to think of it. So, you know, Alabama's got a big, big set of hurdles in front of them. But right now they did definitely regain the crowd and regain momentum. And I'm just going to be interested to see what they look like in the playoffs, because I think these are going to be very, very different teams with 4 months of rest and prep to fix things and work on things and get guys healthy.
All right, y'all. That is it for us. We are both sick and went 25 minutes longer than we thought we would. It's been a rough week for both of us, and we are ready to get some sleep. But thanks so much, y'all, for showing up for the live show on a Saturday night when you probably had other options, including a lot of football on. So we appreciate it so much. We don't know. We haven't talked really about our recording schedule in the offseason. It's a little different than normal. So if you don't see much from us on Monday like you usually do, don't freak out. But thanks so much, y'all. Have a great week, and God bless.